Good morning, and welcome to Point of View on WNUA 95.5 FM Chicago. I'm Charlie Meyerson. Our guest today has the inside story, way inside, on the toy business.
I went in with this naive notion that what I was going to find inside Hasbro or any giant toy company was sort of this fun-filled Santa's workshop. And in fact, what I found was a very brutally competitive business.
It's reporter G. Wayne Miller of the Providence Journal Bulletin. He's the author of Toy Wars, the epic struggle between G.I. Joe, Barbie, and the companies that make them. For 5 years, he had unprecedented access to the goings-on at one of this country's two biggest toy companies, Hasbro. And he's written a book that is fascinating reading for anyone interested in toys, comics, TV, movies, marketing, business, and the intersection of all of them with parenthood and childhood. Welcome to Point of View.
Thank you.
And I'll be honest, we have a lot of authors on the show who write about topics that are certainly interesting, certainly important, sometimes both. But in all honesty, folks, not a lot of those books are just plain fun to read. And this one is, while also telling a story that has great importance to those concerned about the state of childhood in America. It's gotten great reviews, too. Congratulations.
Yes, it has. Thank you. And a very high compliment. I appreciate it.
I think a lot of people are confused about the toy business. I mean, just talking to friends and acquaintances and family members, I don't think people realize that the lineups have changed dramatically, even during the time you were writing this book. Now, what is now the biggest toy company in the world?
The largest toy company on the planet is Mattel, which manufactures Barbie and Hot Wheels and other toys as well. They're closing in on $5 billion in sales, which makes it a tremendously big company.
But Hasbro was the leader.
Hasbro, at the beginning of my project, was the number one toy company in the world, and part of the narrative deals with the jockeying back and forth, the competition, and ultimately Mattel's ascension to the number one spot. But, you know, we're not dealing with, in the case of Hasbro, some tiny little company.
No,
we're looking at a $3.6 billion closing in on $4 billion company. So, you know, these are two giants that are duking it out for the attention of the consumer.
And let's draw sort of a family tree. I don't think people realize the interlocking relationships between so many toy companies that they might have thought were competitors. I mean, which labels are under which company's control?
Starting with Hasbro. Hasbro manufactures almost any board game you can imagine of any note. They manufacture Monopoly, Scrabble, Trivial Pursuit, Clue, Sorry, Battleship, should I go on and on and on?
Milton Bradley
is one of their
writer, and
they earlier on sucked up that company. Yeah. Parker Brothers, they own Parker Brothers. They own really most of the major action figure lines. That includes G.I. Joe, Batman, Star Wars, Jurassic Park, and again, I could just go on endlessly here.
Kenner Toys is
Kenner
Hasbro's
is part of Hasbro. I mean, it's just amazing. When you look at their corporate structure, all these names that you might recognize from your childhood that you think are these little tiny, cool little companies here, and they are owned by one of the two big companies, almost without exception. Mattel has bought up Wham-O. They make Frisbee, Power Wheels. Most people will recognize that name. Plus their own brands that they've had for some time, which include, as I mentioned, Barbie, Hot Wheels, they have Disney toys, they have Fisher-Price. There's not a whole lot left after all these names have been announced or listed.
Yeah, and again, on the infant side, Play School is a division of Hasbro, too.
Play School is a division of Hasbro.
Came under great criticism here in Chicago years ago when Hasbro closed a Play School plant on Chicago's west side.
Yeah, well, you know, that's been another story of the industry as well. As these two giants have gobbled up their smaller brethren, they have moved most of their manufacturing, not simply out of the local areas, but offshore. Most of it is now down in China.
Point of View on WNUA 95.5. Our guest is G. Wayne Miller. His book is Toy Wars, the epic struggle between G.I. Joe, Barbie, and the companies that make them. How'd you begin this book? Was it tough to get the access that you had? And describe that access for our audience.
Well, oddly enough, it wasn't tough to get the access, and I guess that's kind of basically just dumb luck. I'm a reporter, as you mentioned, at the Providence Journal Bulletin in Rhode Island, which is where Hasbro has its world headquarters. And I had gotten to know, you know, not as a best friend, but fairly well, Alan Hassenfeld, who is the chairman and CEO of Hasbro. Hassenfeld stands for Hassenfeld Brothers. Hasbro stands for Hassenfeld Brothers.
Makes sense.
Makes sense. He had been the leader of this ethics reform movement in the state, and during the course of covering that, I was between books for the paper, I got to know him a bit, and I got to thinking, wouldn't it be interesting to see what really goes on inside a giant toy company? And at that time, 5 years ago, almost 6 years ago now, Hasbro was the largest toy company ever in history on Earth. And I approached Alan, and I said, you know, I really have this kind of vaguely defined idea that it might be fun to come in and watch the design and marketing of a toy. And what I had in mind was G.I. Joe, because that really is their signature toy. It was the toy that launched them into a great, large company. And we kind of batted it around for a while, and Alan wanted to know what this would entail. And I said, well, it'll basically mean I'll just hang around for a year or two and go to meetings. And he said, fine. And there were no other preconditions. Now, before you think Alan is totally crazy, I mean, he is very unconventional. I can't imagine the head of GM doing this. But before you think he's crazy, you know, he knew my work, and there was a relationship there. He knew my work was, you know, fairly high-quality stuff, and I wasn't going to give away trade secrets, for example. So he wasn't totally crazy, although some people now might think he was totally crazy. So I just started hanging around. I got a card key. I could travel where I wanted within the company. I could go to their satellite branches. I flew on the corporate jet a number of times. I really became, like, part of the team, to the point where I was even asked on occasion, sort of as a joke, but maybe not really, if I wanted to present new products, you know, at these marketing meetings, which I thought was really crossing the line.
And so you didn't?
I did not, but okay. I was urged to. You know, I made a lot of friends there, and many of them are still friends, and they just thought that would be really funny that this guy who's been here now so long would, you know, present the latest G.I. Joe at a management meeting. 1 year became two, became three, and, you know, just all kinds of stuff happened, and really the story, while it was in part still about the creation and birth of a toy, a G.I. Joe, you'll find that in the narrative. It really became a broader and what I like to think a more compelling drama.
You wanted to get access to Mattel.
I did want access to Mattel. And, you know, this is a funny story. Early on in the project, I called their head of public relations, who is a very fine gentleman by the name of Glenn Bozarth. And he didn't know me from Adam. He gets calls all the time from reporters, and they have all these cockamamie ideas. And I said, you know, look, I'm doing this book. I'm starting with Hasbro, but I would like to, if you would at all permit this, for me to come and sit in on some of your marketing meetings. And he just kind of laughed at me and said, you have to be kidding. And I think also he was a little offended that I was more interested, at least at the start, in Hasbro than Mattel, because he said, you know, frankly, I think we're a much more interesting company. So I think his sensibilities were offended. Somewhat. I never did, unfortunately, get the level of access. I did have certainly a degree of access. I talked to all the major players, did interviews with former and current employees, but no, I did not get the level.
Have you heard from Mattel after the book?
Yes.
Any regrets on their part that you didn't have the access that you wanted?
Well, I had an interesting conversation at Toy Fair, which is the industry trade show held in New York in February every year. I was down there promoting the book, and, you know, people were talking about it. And John Ammerman, who during the reporting was the chairman and CEO, came up to me and, you know, congratulated me on the book. And he said, you know, I had no idea that this was the kind of book you were doing. And he was implying that he would have given me more time had he known that. And I said, well, you know, John, I put the request many, many times. I don't know what happened to it, except I was told you can have one interview and that's about it.
Point of View on WNUA 95.5. Our guest is G. Wayne Miller. His book is Toy Wars. Your book details scenes where people are fired, and there are some tense personal confrontations.
Yes.
of a variety of sorts. What was it like to cover those scenes, to be in those meetings or to gather information about them after the fact in some cases, I guess?
Well, that's a great question. I went in with this naive notion that what I was going to find inside Hasbro or any giant toy company was sort of this fun-filled Santa's workshop, where all the elves merrily went about their business and everyone had a great, zany, fun time preparing toys for next year's Christmas or birthdays or whatever. And in fact, what I found was a very brutally competitive business, both within toy companies and between toy companies. When I started at Hasbro, one of their divisions was not meeting the goals that the chairman and CEO had outlined for them. And there was a sense of almost panic, certainly of great anxiety and concern. As that continued and as the division failed to perform as they had hoped, there began to be talk of a restructuring. And what that meant, to make a long story short, was that they were going to combine divisions and people were going to lose jobs. And by that time, I was about 2.5 years into the process. I was attending meetings both of the high executives who were planning this downsizing, as well as the rank and file who thought perhaps their jobs were on the line. And in fact, I saw names, you know, weeks before people were actually let go. And it was very painful, you know, and we document that in great detail in the book. It was a painful, really horrible experience. You know, people who had been there a long time, people that I knew and had become friends with, one night went home, and the next morning they came into work at 7 o'clock, and they get a phone call, and they were brought down to the office for the termination interview, and then they had to clear the stuff off their desk, and they were gone by noon.
But you knew, in some cases,
yes,
well in advance, that people who, by your own description, had become friends, that they were going to lose their jobs.
Yeah, and
I mean, how did you carry that knowledge? Or keep that knowledge?
Well, it caused me some sleepless nights. I mean, it really bothered me because, ethically, I felt I could not interfere with the process. I did not come in there to try to make the company better or to make it worse. I was really, truly the fly on the wall. But I wrestled with that. You know, I wondered, should I tell somebody whose name is appearing on a list that, you know, maybe they're about to go? Because I knew a couple of good friends were on those lists that I saw. And in the end, I didn't do that.
Did they pressure you? Did they say, you must know?
No, everybody there was a gentleman. They knew I was going to all these high-level meetings. They knew I had knowledge that they didn't have. You know, without exception, everyone at that company was a gentleman to me. And that maybe that's really a compliment to Hasbro. I mean, they were just good people. But it was painful, you know. And one of the worst experiences, however, was really not somebody being terminated, as bad as that was. It was somebody who had headed the Boys Action Division. He had G.I. Joe under his command and a number of other action lines. And G.I. Joe at that time was in deep trouble. Sales were declining. It was the crown jewel of the company. People were panicked. They knew the restructuring was to come down. This was a fine man by the name of Kirk Bazigian. And Kirk headed all this. And I knew before the axe fell that while he probably wasn't going to lose his job, he was going to be demoted. And, in fact, he was demoted. But the demotion was to head of the Play-Doh team, which was really, to my thinking, a slap in the face. And, of course, to Kirk as well. And he was absolutely devastated. Now, to tell you what kind of a man he is, 4 days later was the 30th anniversary celebration of G.I. Joe. And Hasbro had spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to put on this big show on an aircraft carrier in New York City. And he was the guy in charge. And God love Kirk. He went to the press conference. He talked about none of what had just happened to him. He was, you know, the commander-in-chief, as it were. And he just put on a great show for people and, you know, sucked up all of the pain he had. He later left the company. I mean, it was just a totally demoralizing blow. But again, it really illustrates what we're dealing with here. This is not Santa's workshop. This is hardcore stuff.
Point of View on WNUA 95.5. Our guest is G. Wayne Miller. His book is Toy Wars, the Epic Struggle Between G.I. Joe, Barbie, and the companies that make them, which is to say Hasbro and Mattel. One of the things I was surprised to find out after I became a parent for the first time 11 years ago was, you know, we got some birthday presents that looked fine for little kids, and I realized all of a sudden, hey, these things shoot. And there was no warning on the package, and I was under the impression, I thought the Consumer Product Safety Commission took care of this, but there has, to my perception, been a resurgence in recent years, and your book deals with this in part, in toys that shoot, that aim projectiles at kids. There was some struggle within the company over that.
Yeah, there was. When Steven Hassenfeld was alive, and Steven was Alan's older brother, he was really the business marketing genius. He took this schlocky little toy company, which had made G.I. Joe and Mr. Potato Head, those were the big hits, and made this company into a Fortune 500 firm. He died of AIDS. Nobody knew he had AIDS, although it was widely rumored. And then Alan took over. But while he was alive, Steven would not allow G.I. Joe to shoot weapons. They could hold rifles, they could be inside tanks and vehicles. He would not allow them to shoot weapons. Alan had to make a decision after Steven died, when Joe's sales again at that time were flagging, do I arm him or do I not arm him? And it was his thinking, as it was those who had recommended doing this, that it would help sales. And after wrestling with that issue, which was a moral issue, Alan decided that so long as they could not physically hurt a child, he would allow Joe to shoot weapons, and Joe now shoots weapons.
Yeah. Well, try pointing it at your eye and see if it hurts.
I agree with that. I sat through all these product safety meetings, they have very strict standards. And,
oh, yeah. It won't pierce the eye.
Right.
It won't actually make a hole in the eye or the skin, but it still hurts.
Yeah.
Or it would. I'm not that I've actually seen this happen.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend pointing it at your eye just to test the thesis. Although I will say there, in my whole time there, I came across no reports of, you know, kids actually being hurt that way. I did come across reports of products that failed. You know, they had a high chair that cracked and a couple of kids were hurt. And, you know, Hasbro, as with Mattel, really does try to produce a safe toy. They have to. Their reputation is on the line.
And their legal bills, too, for that
matter. The smaller companies, however, you know, there are a lot of these fly-by-night companies that shoot or manufacture weapons. I said weapons, and I meant toys, of course, but could be used as weapons. And, you know, they're there one season and then gone. You can't even find who made them.
You can't track them down. Yeah. What about the ebb and flow of connections over the last several decades among the toy business and comics and movies and TV? I mean, for a long time, the perception was that that television cartoons were being dictated by toy companies, that they were just expanded ads.
And they were. Took a
letter, yeah.
And that's
where
exactly
are we now?
What
and there's been kind of a back and forth on this, too.
There has been a back and forth. You know, if you go back to the 50s, you would occasionally have a Hasbro toy that was a Disney toy, or that you would have a Mattel toy that was a Disney toy, but it was kind of a one-time deal, and there was no great ongoing relationship. Now you have these two companies in particular that have very strong alliances and business deals, contracts with studios, with TV producers, with fast food restaurants, with manufacturers of apparel such as T-shirt and sneakers, with online services, with amusement parks. There's a whole sort of seamless web now involving the big giant players. You know, we're talking Warner Brothers having an alliance with Hasbro. We're talking DreamWorks, Steven Spielberg's new studio, having an exclusive arrangement with Hasbro. We're talking George Lucas, who does Star Wars, receiving close to or an estimated $500 million from Hasbro to do the next line of Star Wars toys. We're talking Disney having an exclusive relationship with Mattel. You know, it's all one giant business where this one concept, be it Batman or be it Star Wars, makes money across all sorts of avenues. I mean, it's just a cash cow anywhere you look. It's an amazing multi-billion dollar industry.
Does any of this make for better toys or better TV shows for kids?
I think you have to go on a case-by-case basis. Star Wars, I think, is going to be, if I had to guess, a brilliant piece of work. We're talking the next three films from the mind of George Lucas. And there are other examples of top quality. DreamWorks is putting out a film called Small Soldiers this summer. Hasbro is doing the toy, and I've seen footage, and it looks like a great film. It's like Toy Story. But, you know, past that, as a gross generalization, I would have to say that at best it's a neutral quality here, and I think in many instances, it's an inferior product, because what is driving the whole enterprise is this a great story, which I think is where you have to start. But would this be translatable into a toy? And I think that's the wrong way to go, frankly. But that's the way we go, because that's how you make money.
Do those licensing fees cut into the quality of toys? I mean, I've tried to steer my kids and say, you know, if you've got a choice between two flashlights and one's got an animated character on it, go for the one that doesn't, because you're getting more toy for your money, and then you're not paying money that goes back to the cartoon studio.
Well, Mattel and Hasbro manufacture quality products. I think where you see the effect is in the price. You can get the same thing without, you know, the Mickey Mouse face for half the price.
Yeah.
A perfect example is Jurassic Park. Now, Hasbro had the exclusive license to do both Jurassic Park movies, the toys from the movies. Now, you could go into Toys R Us the summers that those films were released and find perfectly fine dinosaurs that looked every bit as good as Hasbro's for half the price. So there's the example.
Point of View on WNUA 95.5. Our guest is G. Wayne Miller. His book is Toy Wars. What do you consider the biggest success story, the biggest product rollout or development that you covered in the course of your work?
That would have to be the Star Wars toys. And again, we're talking about a license that costs a whole lot of money. The Kenner division of Hasbro had the original Star Wars toy license back in the late 70s, manufactured the toy for a number of years. When Star Wars kind of went out of vogue in the late 80s, early 90s, stopped making them, and then when it came back into the popular culture, Kenner, now a part of Hasbro, began making the toys again. And they went from, you know, just a trickle roughly 4 years ago to, without knowing the exact figures this year, certainly well over $100 million, probably $200 million or even more. Just an absolute rocket of profit.
Of the products that you saw canned, what did you personally like best?
There was one toy among many that I really loved. It was called It's Alive. And it had been brought in by an outside inventor. And it basically was this large reptilian crocodile-looking thing that crawled along on the floor. And it was a large toy. And it had a leash which went into the tail. And you could control it. And you could make it go left or right, fast, slow. You could open its jaws. And you could make it clamp down on someone's foot all the time with these great monster sounds. And I wanted one of these things desperately. And everyone who was there at the time wanted one of these, and I was sure it was going to be a great toy, probably more for adults even than kids. I mean, you can just see this thing at the office crawling around and just devouring people's feet. And it never came to market, and the reason really was it kind of got caught up in all of the downsizing and the restructuring and the turmoil at that time, but it was a great toy, and I should have just taken the prototype and denied ever having knowledge of it.
At one point in the book, your subjects seem to consider the holy grail of the industry, consolidation of the toy, publishing, animation, the trading card business under one roof. Well, of course, one of the biggest dramas in the toy industry in the last few months has been the explosion, the destruction of what looked like that alliance, Marvel Entertainment and Toy Biz, the comic book and toy company, and that's just kind of blown up. Is that still likely to happen, do you think? Someone going to succeed there?
Well, somebody should succeed there because, as you've noted, they have this amazing variety of characters that are sort of deeply ingrained in the popular culture. I think the story of Marvel and Toy Biz has really been one of competing and clashing egos at management levels, and they've never really been able to reconcile the personality from what should be the business purpose and ultimately the great entertainment for kids. I don't know how that's going to play out. That has been a tortured history for a number of years. One of the people that we write about who was at Kenner, he headed Kenner at the time, Bruce Stein, went to Marvel, and he lasted less than a year because he got caught up in all of this ego conflicts and whatnot. He's now the number two guy at Mattel, and a brilliant marketing man, brilliant toy guy. I can't even predict. It wouldn't surprise me if the people at Hasbro and Mattel are sort of sitting on the sidelines licking their chops thinking, maybe if they totally self-destruct, we'll get the carcass at the end and do something good with it. Because they do have a voracious appetite for gobbling up their brethren.
You were at the big toy fair in New York.
Yes.
What did you see there? What are we looking for on shelves in the near future?
Teletubbies, which is this British concept that Hasbro has brought to this country, looks like it has a chance to make a good deal of money and a splash. Barbie, of course, is going to be big as always. There's an X-Files Barbie. There's an NBA Barbie. Actually, I just saw an F.E.O. Schwartz recently. There's a George Washington Barbie.
George Washington?
Talk about
what is that?
Metaphor. It's Barbie in high heels wearing a tri-corner hat and a George Washington outfit. I kid you not.
Oh, he must be proud of this.
I think it's a hopelessly mixed metaphor, but you know what? It'll sell.
Our guest on Point of View on WNUA 95.5 has been G. Wayne Miller, author of Toy Wars, the epic struggle between G.I. Joe, Barbie, and the companies that make them, $25 from Times Books. And I'm Charlie Meyerson. Thanks for listening.
The views expressed on Point of View are those of the participants and not necessarily those of WNUA 95.5 or Chancellor Media Corporation. You can write to us at 444 North Michigan, Chicago 60611, or send your email to wnuanews@aol.com. Point of View is an exclusive presentation of the news department of WNUA 95.5, Chicago.